Hello and welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. My name is Peter Bean, and I'll be your host. In today's episode, Andrew Hendricks and I speak with the newest member of the Blue Jays broadcast team, Joe Siddall. Joe will be joining Jerry Howarth in the broadcast booth as his new partner on Jays radio broadcast this season. The station confirmed the announcement this Saturday. In the interview, Joe shares the story of how this all got started with an email from Howarth offering condolences for the loss of his son, Kevin. He also tells us how Bob Elliott's column on the Canadian Baseball Network played a role in him getting the job on the broadcast team. Andrew and I also talked to Joe about his time with the Expos and being the catcher for Denny Boucher's debut in Montreal, as well as his time with the Tigers where he threw BP to Miguel Cabrera. This was one of my favorite interviews in a while, so let's listen to that right now.
Thanks for being here, Joe. I really appreciate you coming on the show with such short notice.
Not a problem. Thanks, Peter.
I wanted to start with your background as a player. How did you get started in baseball, and did anyone help you out on your quest to pro ball?
Well, I started playing when I was very young. I think I was about 7 years old when I first started playing. I'm from Windsor, and I played all growing up. I ended up going to Assumption High School and played for Father Cullen. And throughout high school, then I ironically, out of high school, I got a football scholarship and went to Central Michigan University. And after my freshman year there, I had come home in the summer to play baseball with the Windsor Selects. And I got a call from a Montreal Expo scout to come out to a local camp. And I went out to the camp and not thinking too much of it because I knew I had to be back at school in a couple of weeks to a day practice to start up for college football. And I went out with a couple of my friends, too, and thinking nothing of it, I guess I had a good couple of days, and I got a call back to talk about signing a professional baseball contract. And I think I was 19 at the time, so I was kind of naive, and I kind of told them, well, no, I've got to be back at school in a couple of weeks. And, well, they said, no, like, we kind of need to speak with your parents. And so they offered to take us out for dinner and talk to my parents, and we sat down and explained how the whole professional baseball thing works and that I ended up agreeing on a contract, and I had to leave Central Michigan University, give up my education, and go pursue a dream of playing professional baseball.
I wanted to ask you about 1993, when you were part of the eighth Canadian-born battery in Major League history, when you caught Denny Boucher's debut in front of a home crowd for the Expos. The first thing I wanted to ask is about the atmosphere in that place, and what was it like?
Well, it was electric. It was really a special day, and I think obviously with Denny pitching, being from Quebec, that was the big hit, and then I happened to be catching, and then, of course, having the superstar Larry Walker in right field. So it was really electric, and it was great to see the stadium like that, and real fun day. I don't have the greatest memory in the world, but I think we all contributed a little bit as well. I think Denny pitched pretty well. I think I had a hit that day and threw out a runner stealing, and Larry Walker homered that day, but I know there's a story about that, about why we all made a contribution. So really fun day in Montreal and for baseball in Canada.
Did you feel any differently representing your country that day? I mean, I know there was a lot of media attention on the Expos and on the team that you're playing for. Could you kind of sense what was happening, I guess, around
yeah.
you and in Canadian baseball?
Yeah, I mean, it was, like, as I said, it was a very special day. I mean, it was my first year in the major league, so I was obviously excited just to be there and playing in the major leagues. But by that time in September, it makes it extra special. I mean, obviously for your first major league call-up to be with a Canadian team, with Montreal, that was pretty important to us. And but then to have that kind of a day with Larry and Denny in the game as well, it did. And obviously the crowd reacted that way too. And it was really neat. It's like I said, it's kind of a landmark day that we remember in baseball history in Canada.
When did you become aware of the records that were being broken and the landmarks of that game? Was it before or afterwards?
You know, I think some, it might have been before the game, because if I recall correctly, I think some people had us sign some baseballs and all because we were all in the starting lineup. Now, it may have been after the game. I don't even remember. But there was some significant things. I think we signed some baseballs. We must have signed some other things as well just to kind of mark that day on the calendar in history.
Do you still keep in touch with Boucher at all? I know in the past he's kind of worked with the Blue Jays, you know, with the super camps that they have, instructing youth and everything, and now you guys are almost all under the same umbrella again. You still keep in touch with him?
Yeah, I know Denny's been doing a lot of that stuff, and I know he's a scout with the Yankees also, and I do just by text, and I see him occasionally just because I have been going through the coaching. I've been coaching in Ontario in the past few years, and I see him at the occasional camp. And I've texted him, been in contact with him by text a lot in the last couple of years as well. So I don't see him a whole lot anymore, but we do communicate by text.
What teams have you been coaching with in Southern Ontario?
Well, I had my older son, who's now at Canisius College playing baseball. He came up through a Windsor Stars program up to Bantam and then through the Windsor Selects program. So I've been coaching with both of those programs for a number of years. And then I'm sure, as you heard, we lost our younger son to cancer earlier this month, who was 14, so he was also playing for the Windsor Stars, so I've been coaching him as well. And also with my older son, I was coaching with the Ontario youth team for a couple of years with Mark Picard and Scott Robinson.
I am very sorry to hear about Kevin.
Yes, thank you. It was a pretty tragic thing in our lives, and it's crazy how a lot has transpired in this last few weeks, as you can imagine. It's just the timing has been just absolutely surreal, and I truly believe Kev's looking down on me.
In camp right now, when did you get down to Florida with the Blue Jays?
I just got down this week on Tuesday.
Have you run into any of your close friends or ex-teammates since you've been down there?
You know, there's not a whole lot. I do see a couple. I saw Dave Jouse, as a coach of the Pittsburgh Pirates, yesterday. I saw Pete McCannon, who's coaching third base for the Philadelphia Phillies. So I'll see some. Those are a couple of my old coaches. Players-wise, I'm trying to think if I've run into. It's been a whirlwind week, I can tell you. I think it's just it's been such a busy week just for myself, getting to know people, just even with Sportsnet, with the network and everything. But then not only that, but I've got a lot of homework to do too in learning this team of the Toronto Blue Jays, because I, as you probably know, I'm an avid Detroit Tigers fan, working for them in the past. So I didn't know the Blue Jays real well, so I've been really trying to kind of get through their roster and see what those. All those players are about, and to have a good working knowledge of them as they begin to call games here.
Well, you're doing a pretty good job, because the transition just seems absolutely seamless in the way that both you and Jerry are working together. I had a chance to listen to both Wednesday's game and today's game, and you two are really hitting it off well. It sounds good from the viewer's standpoint.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, because this is certainly a new challenge in my life. I always envisioned doing something down the road in baseball. It was my intent all along to, when I finished playing, my intent was to, I was working with the Tigers part-time, but just for home games, and also that I didn't travel, and the purpose was to be able to be home with my kids more and kind of do the stay-home dad and coach their teams, and it's been wonderful. I've been doing that since I finished playing in 2000, and all along, my intent was to see our younger son, who we just lost, through high school. He was in grade 9, and I was hoping to see him through high school for the next 4 years and coach his teams. And since this tragedy struck us, it obviously it changed our lives dramatically for my wife and I and for my other three children, because we were planning on having Kevin with us for the next 4 years at home. And with his passing, all of our other kids are older. Our next oldest child is a daughter in grade 12, and she'll be going away to university next year. And our older two, another daughter and son, are both already away at college. So it kind of instantly changed our lives. And it was just very ironic how this thing all transpired. I would have never taken this opportunity had we not had our issues with Kevin. And so it's funny how things work in this life, but that's why I truly believe Kevin had a part in this.
Absolutely. I'm sure he's looking down right now, and he's awfully proud of his pops. He's doing a great job.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. We always watch. I mean, we've watched a lot of ball games on TV after our games and practices at night at home, and you know, and they always joke about how I'm going to be a broadcaster one day, just because I enjoy the game, and I certainly love commenting on it.
I kind of wanted to get back to your playing days a little bit. I know in 1994 you were at AAA Ottawa, and that was obviously with the Montreal Expos organization. Tell me what the atmosphere was like during that season, just in the organization as a whole. I mean, everybody knew that the Expos were a powerhouse team that year, and they likely would have gone to the playoffs and done quite well in the playoffs if it wasn't for the strike. Was that, you know, did that affect anything at AAA or in the organization at all while you were there?
Yeah, it affected us in a great way, because especially for somebody like myself, I mean, being a backup type player, that being in AAA and hoping for a big league call-up that year, I mean, it wouldn't have been just a regular big league call-up. I mean, you'd probably be going up to a playoff team and maybe a World Series-bound team. So that was it was a very exciting year for the organization, of course, and even being in AAA with the anticipation of probably going up to the big leagues. And so when the strike hit, that put a damper on a lot of things for a lot of people, including us in AAA.
Do you think baseball could survive again in Montreal?
You know, it's interesting, even with the other sports, how sometimes teams leave cities because the interest isn't there, but then those same cities want to get baseball back. And, I mean, I'd love to see it get back. I mean, having played there, there's nothing worse than having played for a major league team that is no longer. You know, it would have been nice, and I know it moved to Washington and all, but to have that extra team in your country. But it gives the Toronto Blue Jays that status as the sole team in our country, which is a wonderful thing too. But I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, fans did certainly come out at times, but maybe it wasn't consistently enough that was going to help the organization thrive.
Okay, let's talk about the new job. Is it official now?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. I know you
Brand
said it's
new,
been a,
though, just today.
I know you said it's been a whirlwind week. How did it all come together?
How did it all come together? I hope you have lots of tape. This is a long answer. I'll try to abbreviate it as much as I can. What happened was, it was 1 week. This is the, again, more irony here with my son, Kevin. But I got an email from Jerry Howarth. And Jerry is the play-by-play voice, as you all know. And Jerry and I, we don't know each other really well. We see each other every year when I'm doing my job with the Tigers and he comes to town. And I've seen him in past years because I am Canadian and had played in the big leagues. So we've talked in the past whenever we run into each other, which isn't too often. But Jerry had read in Bob Elliott's column, believe it or not, and he told me this today, actually, that he read in Bob Elliott's column about Kevin. He read this story that Joe Siddle's son, Kevin, had passed away. This was on February 11th. My son passed away February 4th, so this is 1 week later. And ironically, February 11th was Kevin's birthday, so he didn't quite make his 15th birthday. And Jerry sent me an email with condolences for Kevin on February 11th. So he sent me this email, and I'm just reading it and thinking, oh, Jerry Howarth, yes, I always respected Jerry, nice man. And I read this email, and when I replied, I just thanked him. I thought it was very nice of him to go out of his way to send an email. It was wonderful. And at the end of my email, just totally in jest, I said, you know, looking forward to seeing you this year when the Blue Jays come to Detroit, because that's when I would see him. And then at the very end of my email, I just put, or perhaps in the broadcast booth one day. And why I put that, I don't know. Just kind of, you know, it's something I've kind of joked myself about in broadcasting someday or coaching or doing something in baseball. But anyway, when I put that, Jerry, and he said it today too, he says, Joe, if you didn't put that last line, I would have never responded to you. But Jerry replied right away, and his reply was, how about right now? And then he proceeded to tell me about what happened with Jack Morris and that he had left to go home and that the Blue Jays or that Rogers Sportsnet was looking for a replacement. And he said, I could put your name forward to our program director if you wish. So I read my email and I kind of started chuckling and I looked at my wife and I said, oh, you won't believe this one. So we thought, sure, we'll kind of go for it, not thinking it would lead to anything because we figured it was a real long shot because especially it was so late in the process. So I replied to Jerry and I said, sure, go for it, you know, tell him what I'm about and, you know, that I'm interested because it's something that I've always been interested in. And I thought, what the heck, why not, right? He came back. We exchanged lots of emails about broadcasting in general and about if I were to be his partner and how I would enjoy doing it. And it just kind of came to be where he was going to let Don Collins know, his program director, and hopefully have him get a hold of me. Well, I ended up exchanging emails with Don Collins, and he had said to give him a call on the Monday, I think it was. He had a busy week ahead of him with a lot going on. So I finally got a hold of him Monday morning. He called, which was wonderful. I had a long conversation. That was after exchanging some emails. And again, in my emails, I was explaining to Don why I thought I could do the job, and I understand it's late in the process and all that stuff. But we had a great conversation on the phone, and I think Don got to know me a little bit and hear me speak a little bit. And he said that, you know, despite it being late in the process, I mean, he'd love to kind of include me, but that he's got a couple of guys coming down to Florida next week, and he's kind of wanting to get this thing going and to name someone and wrap it up. So he said that perhaps during the summer he could bring me to Toronto and maybe be on the Baseball Central show just to get some experience, see how the business works and what it's all about if I'm interested for the future. So I was fine with that. And then I got an email from him Saturday night. My wife and I had gone down to Charlotte, North Carolina to watch my son play college baseball. So I had kind of written the idea off, but I got an email from him, and he said that, is there any chance you can come to Florida to broadcast a few games? So as soon as I got the email, I was shocked, of course. So I replied right away, and I said, absolutely. So I let him know that I was in Charlotte driving home on Sunday. He said, I will talk to you Monday morning. So when I got up Monday morning, I already had an email from Don, which was dated very early, and he asked me if I could be on the Jeff Blair show at 11:30 in the morning because he just wanted to hear me. So I said, absolutely, sure. So I did, and I was on the show with Jeff and for about 5 minutes. Thought it went very well. Had a good baseball chat, a little bit of Blue Jay talk, a little bit of baseball talk. And Don called me later in the afternoon, and he said, we'd like to bring you to Florida to do some games. So I was going to fly out Saturday, and then I got a call back a couple hours from him, a couple hours ago, after that, I'm sorry, and he asked me if I could be on a plane tomorrow, meaning Tuesday. So I'm kind of chuckling again, and I said, sure. So I didn't know what had happened or what transpired with his other candidates, but I said, absolutely. And he said, you know what, Joe, I just have a gut feeling with you here. I like a lot what I hear, and a lot of our conversations through email and on the phone that we had, and he just had a good feeling that he says, I think this is a good thing. I'd like to bring you to Florida. So I was here Tuesday, and I did Wednesday's game in Clearwater with Jerry, wow, on my first ever broadcast. So that's how it all transpired. I know it's a bit of a long story, but it was it's a very interesting one.
And how did you get the news that that it was confirmed permanently?
I sat with Don on Thursday or Friday night, I think, and we talked about a lot of details, and he was offering the job to me, and it was something that I was going to be pretty much in agreement with, and I spoke with my wife long and hard about it, and she's been very supportive, as has my other three children, and which is a wonderful thing, because it's going to be different. You know, it's going to be tough being away from home. I had also contacted, way back when this first started, I had contacted the Tigers also, who I already had worked for, and just to I know the communications vice president, Ron Colangelo, there, and I just said, you know, is there anything open possibly broadcasting-wise in Detroit, TV, radio, whatever? And he said that he talked to the producer at Fox Sports Detroit. So he did that for me, and sure enough, I got a call. I talked to him, and I was going to meet with them as well, just to kind of keep all options open, because I thought, yes, now I have hit a time in my life here where I can pursue something like I had always wanted to, you know, unfortunately due to Kevin's loss. And so that's how it kind of transpired, and it just kind of kept going from there. And Don and I talked that night, and my wife and I had chatted, and we thought that's good. And so it was actually last night that he actually showed me a contract, and we got it done.
That's a great story. I mean, you really speak a lot about Jerry Howarth, your partner now, as being integral in that process, bringing you aboard. Now I know your last game in the majors was in 1998. Ironically, it was at then SkyDome, which is obviously Rogers Center now. Without a question of a doubt, I think Jerry called that game with Tom Cheek. How does that feel for you, knowing that, you know, the same guy who called you as a ball player is now your partner in the booth? Is that an interesting dynamic that you two have?
It's very ironic is what it is. Yes, I didn't know that. As I said, I don't have the greatest memory in the world, but when Jerry started rattling stuff off like that, and when he told me that my last major league game, he told me that the other day actually, was at Rogers Center in SkyDome, and that he had called it, yes, I was just chuckling because he has a great memory, I'm sure, and he remembers a lot of his broadcasts. But yes, just many twists and turns in this journey, and it's as I said, it's just a great story with the fact that Jerry even thought to send me an email because, again, as I said, number one, he said if he doesn't read Bob's column, he would have not known that my son had passed away and would not have sent me that email. And then when he did send the email, and I still say that it was on Kevin's birthday, and I sent that one comment at the end of my email and my reply, which alerted him that I'd be interested. And so there's, yeah, many little twists and turns that are just so ironic at the way this came to be, because if one of those things did not happen, I would not be sitting here today.
I know you were a catcher during your playing days, and I'm just wondering if maybe you can provide a little bit of insight as to why catchers make such good analysts when it comes to baseball. I know your colleagues, you know, Buck Martinez, he was a catcher. In the past, we've had Alan Ashby, and of course, you know, guys like Bob Uecker were also catchers in their playing days. Is it just because you guys are the field captains, in a sense? Is that why you think the analyzing of the game comes naturally for that position?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's like the quarterback on the football field, and the catcher is really in charge of the game, and the catcher is the one position on the field that, I mean, just the pitcher-catcher relationship alone, which I've talked about already on air, and I will talk about a lot more on the air, because I think it's a very important dynamic on a baseball field is the pitcher and catcher relationship. And because the catcher, I think, is so important to the pitcher's performance in calling a game, but also in doing your homework and understanding the pitcher's strengths and weaknesses, what he does best, what he, you know, his best pitch, his second best pitch, but also having to know the hitters. And I continually joke about how the catcher's the brains behind the operation. But it is such an important position because there's so much information to digest. And then you've got a pitcher out on that mound who I always treated as, he's my guy out there. That's my baby, basically. And I got to guide this guy to victory because he's got the tools that we need to win this game. So what I don't want him to do is out on that mound is to have to worry about all the outside stuff, such as the hitter's strengths and weaknesses and what he did last at bat. So there's nothing better than a catcher gaining the trust of a pitcher that when you put the fingers down, he's just ready to go. And we talked about that with Mark Burley the other day. He just entrusts his catcher with the sign he puts down. So I think it's partly that. That's just one component. But then it's also as the game begins and, you know, you've got to help control the running game. And you just see the game from a very different perspective. And I think a lot of times, I you know, it's almost like a coach's perspective because I said the ultimate compliment I think I got as a catcher was from my former manager, Felipe Alou, when he said that he felt good when I was catching because he felt like there was another, he was my assistant coach on the field. And I take that as an ultimate compliment as a catcher because he feels that comfortable with you guiding the game out there.
I wanted to ask you what the most important thing you've learned so far in the booth in the last couple of days. Biggest lesson?
Probably in just a few short days here, probably, and Jerry's really helped me with this, is to speak at the right time. And I think it's important that, number one, you're not talking over your partner. Number two, that you're not interjecting when he might be in the middle of a thought. So there's that kind of stuff that you got to think about. The other thing I had is I had another good reference. One of my former teammates, FP Santangelo, who everybody in Ottawa and Montreal knows very well, good friend of mine. He's a broadcaster with the Washington Nationals. He does TV as an analyst. And last year when they came to Detroit, FP brought me up into the broadcast booth with him for the game. And it was a great experience for me. Now, I didn't do it because I thought I was going to enter a broadcasting career this year, let me tell you. But it was great. It was a great day. And he kind of, we had lots of talks and talked a lot about his craft and how he does it. And he gave me a lot of tips. And then even when this all started going down and when all this possibility was taking place that I may be pursuing this and coming to Florida with the Blue Jays, that we've been talking a lot, and again, he's been reiterating some of the things we've talked about before. And then, of course, I've spoken with Jerry a little bit before our first broadcast, and we speak every day some more. And each and every day brings a little something new, a little maybe a different, some insight in some way that's going to hopefully help me, and that's what I plan to do, and I hope to continue to get better each day.
I wanted to ask you just quickly, what do you think the performance of the 2014 Toronto Blue Jays is going to be like this year? Do you... I know you talk a lot about it during the broadcast, but in your own opinion, do you see this team as a team that's on the rise? Do you think they're going to be a lot better than they were in 2013? Just kind of give us your general idea of the club, given the experience that you've had in the major league.
Yeah. It's. I'll preface it by saying it's very difficult for me right now to do that, only because I'm about 4 days into this, and as I said,
sure.
I'm doing a lot of my homework and looking at players and trying to see things develop, and I think I'll know a lot more in watching another week or 10 days of games. That'll help a lot. But what I see right now is a lineup that can certainly compete in the American League. It's a very difficult division that the Blue Jays are in, battling in the American League East. Nobody likes that. But I think it's a lineup on paper that certainly can compete. We all talk about staying healthy. That's probably not even worth mentioning right now because it's so obvious. You have to stay healthy, and that's what was the biggest downfall last year. I think the bullpen looks very good, and I think the biggest question, I think defense will be fine. I think the biggest question is starting rotation. We've got two guys in R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley that I think you pretty well know what you're going to get from them, and they're going to be solid starters for you. Brandon Morrow, question mark, only again because of health. Hopefully he can regain his health and regain his form. If so, I think you've got three pretty darn decent starting pitchers right there at the top of your rotation. And then whatever happens at 4 and 5, it looks like right now it's J-Hap's fourth spot to lose, whether he keeps pitching well throughout the spring, and we'll see how that transpires. Then that fifth spot seems to be totally up for grabs right now. It's like tryout camp. So as any team goes, starting pitching, if you're going to do well, if this team plans to, you know, if your goal here is to win a World Series, you need a very good starting rotation, especially your top three. And as we know in the playoffs, we all watch the playoffs every year, and that's what teams run out there. They run out there a pretty good starting three in their rotation, and that's what it takes to win a World Series. So it's definitely what it takes to get to the playoffs, and especially out of the American League East. So the starting rotation, I think, will take this team as far as it's going to go.
What about the Tigers? I know you're obviously a Tigers fan, and what do you think of their off-season moves?
Well, it's different. They changed their tactics a little bit. They went from I liked them in one sense because I think that's one drawback that the Tigers had for the last few years, despite competing and winning champions, winning their divisions and all, but not quite getting to the world, winning the World Series, was they were a slow team. They're a slugging team, and they're a slow team. And sometimes, I tell you, I've seen it. It takes them four hits to score a run, and that's pretty frustrating when you have slower runners on the bases and you get two, three hits, and you still haven't scored a run yet. You need that fourth one to score a run. So they tried to get quicker, and you know, sometimes you live and die by it, and they did, and they did very well by it. The only thing they didn't do is win a World Series. So I think what they're trying to do is turn that corner and maybe try this little bit of a different approach. Time will tell. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, if they go this year and don't do near as well, then it's probably going to hush all those critics that thought they got to get quicker. They don't run fast. You know, they count on the home run too much. Well, it seems to me that serviced them pretty well for a few years, but this is different in unloading Prince's bat, and I think more so his contract for the future is what was saddling the team. I think that was what that was more about. So hopefully that'll help him. But, you know, adding like a Kinsler and a little bit more speed in the lineup, Rajah Davis, and it's going to help that team. It's just transformed that team into a little bit of a different dynamic, and they're going to be maybe playing a little bit more small ball now with a younger manager and Brad Ausmus. Here's a guy, again, great catcher in his day, and I think he'll do just fine as a manager as well.
Now, you were around the Tigers organization. I believe you were a batting practice pitcher. Is that correct?
Yes, I helped them with batting practice, whether I threw batting practice for them or I did a lot of soft toss in the cages with the hitters every day. And so, yes, I was very involved with just at home games with all of their pregame.
Okay, so I guess the common question that you probably get all the time is, where does Miguel Cabrera like the ball during BP? And if you were a pitcher, where would you pitch him in real life?
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter where you put it. No, he's a joy to be with every day and to work with on a daily basis. He is just that good. He's one of those, I call him almost freaks of nature. I mean, you can't teach what he does. He is just an amazing hitter. I think probably the biggest thing that everybody is most amazed at with Miguel Cabrera is his opposite field power. He can just pepper the right field bleachers in batting practice like you've never seen, and it's an unbelievable display because it even, I mean, you'll get the other team that's out on the field coming out there for their warm-ups to stretch. They'll stop what they're doing and watch. Sometimes he puts on such a display. There's not really, I think, with any good hitter, you have to move the ball around, you have to change speeds, more things that I'll talk about in my broadcast, but you especially have to do it against a hitter like that. And there's pitchers that do it, and they're successful, but I think sometimes, too, it's a lot more so if Miguel gets in a bit of a funk and his timing's a little bit off. That's when he gets in his little slumps, and he doesn't get in slumps for very long, and that's what great hitters do, is they never go in too long of a funk. So he's one of the best there is. There's no question, probably one of the best that there ever will be.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you a couple more questions. The first one is a local question about Windsor and why you think Windsor is such a hotbed for baseball in Canada.
Isn't it crazy? And I mean, it started when I was very young, and I used to hear people refer to Windsor that way. And I mean, I would have to believe it's A, the programs, and B, the coaching. I think we've been very fortunate, very blessed over the years to have, you know, again, I was coached by Father Cullen throughout the Mi'kmaq program, and to have these programs like the Windsor Selects that's run by Bernie Soulier that's been doing this for so many years, and for the people to dedicate their time and their energies, and then to be luckily to have these coaches in place like that over the years. And then, you know, Father Cullen, he was very good at getting his former players to come back and help give back. And that was a great thing because, you know, I enjoyed doing it because there's nothing better than come back and help kids and to give back a little bit. And he was very good at that. I had some of his former players coaching me when I was younger, and I came back myself. And you know, the Selects program is still prospering, doing very well.
All right, well, thanks again for being here and coming in on your first official day. I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to listening to you call games this year.
Thanks very much, guys. It's my pleasure.
And that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank Joe Siddall for coming on this show, especially with such short notice. I'd also like to thank Effective Business Video for our production and the Isotopes for the music. If you have suggestions for the show, please send me an email at podcast@CanadianBaseballNetwork.com. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. I'm Peter Bean, signing off.